You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and I'm your host, Michael Slate. Now, if you've been watching the news or reading the paper, you may have heard about the launch of hashtag OutNow on October 19th in Los Angeles and New York, and about the attack on protesters on the Santa Monica Pier near Los Angeles by neo-Nazis who assaulted anti-Trump, anti-fascist demonstrators and sprayed them with chemicals that are the chemicals used to take bears down, okay? Check that out. We will be reporting more on this in the future, so stay tuned. At the back end of the show, you'll hear an interview with Paul Street. Paul Street is an independent progressive policy researcher, award-winning journalist, historian, and author, and we'll be talking about why people need to be in the streets to remove the Trump regime. And opening the show up, I want to welcome back to the show Andy Z. He's co-initiator of Refuse Fascism and member of the National Revolution Tour. We talked just before the October 19th protests. Andy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. One thing I want to jump into this right away because, you know, the time gets limited and it gets used up so fast. But I wanted to talk with you in particular about something that, well, about this, what's been going on with Refuse Fascism, what's been going on in relation to what's happening in society at large. And I'll just read something here, which is, I guess it's about a meeting that was recently held a collection of meetings that were recently held nationwide. And let me read this. It says, in the last week and a half of September, RefuseFascism.org convened meetings in a dozen cities that drew some 300 people and came to a momentous decision to launch mass nonviolent protests starting on October 19th in New York City and Los Angeles and then spreading across the country each Saturday for the next 4 weeks of Out Now protests demanding the Trump-Pence regime must go now. Let's talk about this. What is going on here? What are you saying to people? I mean, aside from what is obvious, but it seems like this is actually a ratcheting up of what's been called for, what's needed, an understanding of what's needed, and what people need to step up and speak to.
Yeah, Michael, we've made a decision that now is the time when people need to act. Look, this has been building up, obviously, over 3 years. 3 years ago, we identified that this was a fascist regime and it needed to be stopped. There were those who recognized that at that time, and many didn't and thought it would not be able to succeed in a country like this, that it couldn't happen here. But just to fast forward to this summer, people began to see on a new level that they were not to be deterred, including that protests that had been waged a year or two before around the separation of families and been upheld by the court that you couldn't do this. Nonetheless, the regime was doing this, including separating children, sending still living in cages, building concentration camps. And at the same time, concurrent with this, by early August, there was the mass murders of Latino immigrants that had followed, mass murders of Jews in Pittsburgh. So people were beginning to see that things were sharpening up. And then after we called for these protests, that we were beginning to see things very much sharpening up at the top of society, then the revelations came of the essentially extortion, quid pro quo, whatever you want to call it, in the Ukraine, and the Democratic Party decided to, or Nancy Pelosi, as the main leader of that in the House, decided with impeachment, to go ahead with impeachment, although on relatively narrow grounds. So now we find ourselves in the midst of an emerging constitutional crisis. And the question really before the people is, who is going to settle this? On what terms is it going to be settled? Are the interests of the people going to be represented in this? And what will happen if this regime weathers this storm, which indications are that the Democratic leadership doesn't expect to actually oust him from power? And even should they do so, he would, the entire regime and the terms of fascism would remain intact and, in fact, be legitimized for the fact that right now they're not being identified by the Democrats as grounds for impeachment. They're only indicted on two factors, it seems, national security, which is something that I think many of your listeners would question. Is that actually the grounds that the people of this country and the people would support? And also that the is that in the interest of the people of the world? We can get into that, as well as disrupting the election process, which is probably a major thing that brought Nancy Pelosi around, because their legitimacy of everything they stand for, the Democrats, it is the norms of this exploitative system, would be called into question. So they're fighting on those grounds. But for us, what we're calling for is something different. We're saying that we actually have to stop this regime, and the only way it can be stopped is through creating a political crisis for the ruling class from below. There already is a political crisis, and it's going to sharpen up at the top of society. You know, there's many different factions within the fascist regime, within the Democratic Party, and all in between. People in the ruling class are really struggling, fighting it out in big ways as to how to continue their empire. Now, that's not the position of Refuse Fascism, but it is my position on this. And Refuse Fascism recognizes that the continuance and consolidation of a fascist regime, it poses a grave danger for humanity. And we have and are attracting now people who are supporters of different candidates, Democrats, people who believe in democracy under this terms of this system, believe that the system can be reformed to be a force for good in the world and America could live up its promise. And there are those of us who were, like myself, who are followers of Bob Avakian, who've come at it from a different perspective, that the problem now is the system that gave rise to this and it needs to be stopped. But our program, to get to your question, is this. We believe that the only way to actually really dislodge this fascism for a significant period of time, and understand it has a mass base of millions and millions of people, 63 million people voted for Trump, there's 30 to 40 million people solid in that fascist base, there's very powerful forces in the ruling class, there's an entire Christian fascist movement that's been built over a long period of time, that the only way to dislodge this is to create a situation where in cities across this country, tens of thousands and eventually hundreds of thousands of millions are demanding the regime, the entire regime, be removed from power. So to start that process off, which is not where the American people are at right now, although there's a section of people who do feel this way, we've initiated 5 weeks of struggle, 5 weeks of continuing protest, beginning this Saturday in Los Angeles, and then at the same time, or earlier in the day, will be in New York City. But this then launches a national movement a week from Saturday in cities across the country, which then we will continue for another 3 weeks to hopefully get to the point where this can be sustained, where many different social movements, many different sections of the people are coming in and are going to unite around one demand from many different perspectives and with many different probably special interests or issues they're concerned about, whether it be Black Lives Matter or Latino immigrants or the women's movement, where people are going to come and say, I'm fighting around the environment, and that's why I believe that the Trump-Pence regime must go now. And so we have basically a plan of gathering increasing numbers of people and gathering momentum and unifying people around a demand that people can then adapt in various different ways. And for Refuse Fascism part, and we have always added in the basic standpoint, the bedrock of our movement is, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. We are not just fighting for the interests of people here, but recognizing the grave danger that this regime poses to people all around the world, as you can see evidence right now on the border between Turkey and Syria.
Well, now tell me this, man, because, and I think it's really important what you're saying, but I also know that a lot of people will say to me when I talk with them about this, they'll ask me things like, okay, look, you're saying it's going to be a struggle, but it's possible to do this, but you're really trying to bring to life something that's needed. But hey, where people will say, I don't see where it is or how it's going to be possible. Basically, you're talking about a regime that couldn't care less about what people think and is moving ahead with this as you've pointed out, in a full-on force to establish a fascist rule. And this is something that really needs to be, I think, clear to people is, if you're going to take this on, you're going to take it on. And what will that actually mean? What will it look like?
Well, that's a good question. Look, the regime is definitely not going to be listening in the sense of wanting to say, we've really been fascist, so we're going to step down. That's not a question. But they are going to face increasing necessity. And they're already, you can see in response to the actions of the Democrats in Congress, are already, you start seeing the things fraying and not just fraying, but the more important thing that people have to keep their eyes on is hardening at the core of this. If you watch the speech in Dallas, if you watch by Trump, if you watch the rally in Minneapolis, you can see that the actual terms of this are, it's the straight up assertion of open, blatant, violent dictatorship that's enforcing white supremacy, xenophobia, hatred, and targeting of immigrants, patriarchy, vicious misogyny, and especially an assertion of American power. And, you know, it's important to recognize here, there's a lot of people. See, this is what happens when you have a struggle at the top without the people being represented who are at the bottom of this, and the Democratic Party, including the progressive Democrats, who haven't really gone at this in any kind of substantial way, that you're being rallied to say, oh, he's betrayed our allies, the Kurds. He's, you know, in terms of the deal he made with the fascist Erdogan in Turkey. But actually, let's just be clear on this. There's a major split in the up at the top of society as to how to actually advance U.S. interests in the Middle East. And these fascists have a different plan to assert U.S. power. It is not a more benign plan, whatever the hell he said in Dallas about, I brought the troops home, I'm bringing the troops home. It's actually a plan to assert more power. But, you know, the idea of abandoning allies in the history of America is not something new. You could start right at the beginning with the Native Americans from Plymouth Rock all the way through every single treaty violated. And all around the world, the U.S., and including the Democratic Party, have a long history of betrayal here. And I was just reading an article in Foreign Affairs that recounts when Lyndon Johnson essentially gave the same kind of ultimatum to, or a similar ultimatum to Greece that brought in a fascist form of rule, overthrowing the democracy there, a bourgeois democracy that was in Greece in the 1960s. So this is a long history of America. And see, here's the problem. The people who care about the people of the world, who want justice for all of humanity, who want to stop the devastation of the climate that is actually driving tens of millions and hundreds of millions of people to flee their countries and seek some kind of relief in the imperialist North, whether it be Europe or here, and then are going to be met by a gated community, in sense, all of North America, all of Europe, with guns and camps and walls and forcing people back out into the seas to Mediterranean and elsewhere to drown. All of this is a product of the system, but we have to recognize that if we do not unite, even though, not even, but especially all those people who seek justice and, you know, would like to see a restoration of the norms, as well as those of us who see these problems more intrinsic to the system, we need to get out there and drive this regime out. And the only way to do that is to create a political crisis, which maybe this gets to the heart of your question, a political crisis for those in the ruling class who will see the interests of their system now, not just as called into question by Trump, because I do believe that ultimately, rather than risk the future of their system, they would not go to the mat against the Trump and the fascists, and we can get into that a bit later, but they will not go to the mat. But if the people do, if the people get into the streets, then you have a situation where it becomes a big issue. The entire world is focused on these hundreds of thousands of millions of people in the streets of America, and that the fact that they're not going away. They're coming back week after week and probably eventually day after day. And that creates a lot of political necessity for those at the top of society who want to preserve their system. And at that point, maybe they would have the freedom, and certainly they have the evidence, to not just indict and impeach and remove Donald Trump, but Mike Pence and Pompeo and Barr. All of these people are impeachable, even on the narrow grounds that of this Ukraine crisis, but actually even moreover on their violation of essential protocols of the and procedures of this U.S. Constitution. I mean, you just saw this in the Barr speech at Notre Dame, where he basically advocated for overthrowing the separation of church and state and the First Amendment and establishing an official religion. So these are the kinds of, this is what we're calling for, that kind of crisis. And it's true that right now people are not there. But I think if they see a force over the next 5 weeks of thousands of people getting out in the street and continuing it and really putting forward this single unifying demand, the Trump-Pence regime must go now, that there's a basis for people to come and get into the streets and in nonviolent, I want to emphasize that, nonviolent, sustained mass protest in the town squares, through the city streets, through the streets of the shopping malls, and all of this around the country. That could create the kind of political crisis where not only would it compel the removal of this regime, but it would open up a lot of space for all the struggles of resistance and for justice.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me remind listeners that you're tuned into The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with Andy Z, co-initiator of Refuse Fascism and a member of the National Revolution Tour. And we're talking about basically standing up and going up against the Trump fascist regime. But let me ask you this, Andy, this point about the importance of bringing in the basic people in all this, because at this point, what's going on is you have these two groupings of people, both of which are involved somewhere in electoral politics. And quite frankly, a lot of the people, the basic people who actually, you know, could actually raise all kinds of hell and be a very formidable force in terms of going up against this fascist regime, are not being spoken to. And I think there's a need to go beyond what basically is being offered. And really, I mean, it is true, you know, as I said before, the Democrats never even talk about this guy. Hey, folks, we got a Nazi up here. We got to do something about this. Even that far doesn't get going. And so the real need to actually take this out of the hands and the control of the two major political forces in the country that we're told are always the two and only two major forces, and into more importantly, the masses of people themselves, from many levels of people, including from the people on the bottom to the people going all the way up.
Well, getting rid of this fascist regime is in the interest of the people of the world, all over the world. And because America is not some small little country, it's the largest military in the world, larger than the next five countries. It's the dominant economy in the world, even as it's a lot of what it does in the world now from both political parties is to contend with and want to contain China, which, you know, goes under the signboard of being still the People's Republic of China. But it's been over 40 years that it ceased to be anything close to a People's Republic. It's nothing but a capitalist imperialist country, even as the rulers of it find it advantageous to maintain the prestige in that country of the revolution there in 1949. So, look. The people on the bottom of this society, you know, we go out among them all the time with the revolution clubs around the country. And one thing, even the term basic people, this is people who are catching the hardest hell into this system. And there's a lot of thinking that goes on in that strata. Okay. People have a lot of ideas. And one of the things we're running to is how deeply people hate Donald Trump. But as with every other political question that faces the people who are locked into the ghettos, or when they go downtown to shop, or, you know, in Chicago, actually the police actually put people on trains and go back to the south or the west side. It's unbelievable. It's really apartheid kind of situation. But that apartheid exists in New York and L.A. and different places, and just in different forms. There's a deep well of hatred there, and also not as quite as many illusions in the same form about the system itself, even as being surrounded and locked in and feeling constantly diminished, including, for example, when Obama went out there and said, it's your personal responsibility to get yourself out of this mess and pull up your pants, all this kind of crap. Nonetheless, this could be a very powerful impetus and force and needs to have a voice here, along with people from the middle classes and the intellectuals and the people from Hollywood and in New York, the arts and sciences. All those people who were outraged the day after the inauguration in 2017, all the people who came out to the science march and the climate march in 2017, as well as all these youth who've been out there over the last week with Extinction Rebellion, and the people on the bottom of society who began to raise their heads in the context of that Black Lives Matter movement, but that got very quickly co-opted and derailed to a significant extent, even as people are still struggling in smaller groups around the country. All of this needs to be marshaled to drive this regime out for power. And here's another thing that we do say in our call for this, that look, the world that we've known is being torn asunder. And to just break that down into maybe more common speak, that world that you think you had or is the promise is no longer here. Trump isn't playing. These fascists aren't playing by the same rule book, even as the Democratic Party wants to enforce that rule book and talk about policies and reaching across the aisle as if there was an aisle to reach across. The program of the people in power is not to reach across the aisle. It's to either wipe out or domesticate the other side of the aisle, which they could do. absent the struggle of the people. So we go on to say we must cast off fear and passivity and not allow our differences to stand in the way of rising together in the unprecedented, unrelenting, nonviolent mass out-now protest to drive out the Trump-Pence regime. And right now, we must seize on the impeachment crisis that's now erupting and take history into our own hands and turning dread for the future into a force for hope. And I wanted to speak about this for a second, because if you think about all the things that people bridle under, agonize over, feel dread about this regime, but certainly among the people at the bottom of society feel almost on a daily basis and a continual basis, including the 2.5 million in prison and the 10 million of their families, there's a tremendous dread for the future. But if there were a movement of hundreds of thousands and millions of people all across the country demanding this regime would go, that would be a tremendous weight lifted off of all the struggles. And in the course of this, we should have a big society-wide struggle and discussion and debate over reform versus revolution and what kind of revolution. All of this is not part of the public discourse. Everybody's into their own silo. You know, and this is part of the effects of intersectionality and identity politics, where people are looking at this in terms of ever narrowing groups of people and finding the places where we can meet, instead of taking a look at the system that lies behind all of this, and then on that basis, forging unity and overcoming the forms of historical and legacy oppression of different sections of the people that must be overcome, but I would say and very strongly advocate for, and it's part of the new communism, can only be overcome through a revolution that brings about a different economic system and a different political system. But again, I'll reemphasize that refuse fascism and the out-now movement that we are trying to launch right now must invite all different kinds of people to be involved in this with different political and views that are quite different than mine. And in fact, recently there have been articles, Michael, that have appeared. I was just reading one from somebody I had never actually read before, a guy, a fellow named Wim Levin, who I guess he's from Georgia, teaches down there. And he writes an article saying, familiarize yourself with Out Now. It's refusefascism.org's message. In the name of humanity, refuse to accept a fascist America. He talks about the protests. He then brings his views into this, which are different than mine, but we actually not just overlap, but in reading this, I've never met the person, but have profound unity. And he says that, you know, if we do this, apathy and inaction, which echo the worst events in our history, you cannot continue to call yourself a good person when you've been willing to ignore. And we've ignored and allowed so much. Citizens must remove Trump from office in the name of humanity, both the world's and our own. Otherwise, there is too much denying the genocide we are complicit in. Removing Trump from office is the means for washing the blood from our hands. I think that that is something that should be able to reach very deeply into the audience of the Michael Slate Show, and certainly should fill the streets over the next 5 weeks. Everywhere, get out in really big numbers next Saturday, and then let's grow on the 2nd, the 9th, and the 16th. And then let's get together and figure out how we really make this a big deal through the holiday season, and which will coincide with the struggle at the top of society over impeachment.
I couldn't agree more, and I think people really got to recognize that we're talking about the actual future of humanity and the planet that's at stake here, and this is extremely important. Andy, we have to wrap up now, but is there anything else you want to leave people with before that, before we leave?
This is not about Andy Z or about refuse fascism or about the movement for revolution. It's about all of those things only matter in the context of what humanity actually faces and what humanity needs. It needs this regime gone, and then the struggle is on. And from my perspective, humanity desperately needs a revolution and a new social system. But that's a discussion that we can only have in a meaningful way if we are able to defeat and drive this fascism from power. So that's what I just wanted to say in conclusion. And I appreciate always the opportunity to be on the Michael Slate Show.
And you will be for the future.
All right. Okay, good.
Often.
Right, thank you.
All right, Andy.
See you soon.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay, take care, man. All right, bye-bye.
Bye. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we've just been talking with Andy Z, co-initiator of Refuse Fascism and member of the National Revolution Tour. We'll take a musical break and be right back, so stay tuned.
They sentenced me to 20 years of boredom for trying to change the system from within. I'm coming now, I'm coming to reward them. First, we take Manhattan. Then we take Berlin.
That was Leonard Cohen with First We Take Manhattan. I'm really pleased to welcome to the show my guest, Paul Street. And we're going to be talking with Paul about a piece he wrote for Counterpunch called Beyond Impeachment, Remove This Regime from Below. And he's a prolific author, but his most current book is They Rule, The 1% Versus Democracy from Paradigm. All right, sure. Let's jump into this, because when I read your piece in Counterpunch, it's actually something that I've been like, and we've been doing on the show a lot, really stressing to people that these, not only are these not normal times, but these are times that demand some things that people don't ever usually consider as like viable or necessary. And that these are times that actually are demanding quite a bit from people if actually the planet is going to survive in any conceivable way. And I came across your piece in Counterpunch and I thought, I've really got to talk to you because I thought it was that important. So welcome to the show, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Let's jump into this. You know, one of the things that you say in this is you talk about how, and a lot of people, I mean, I've talked to a lot of people who talk about, well, the regime has to be forced out, but they don't really have any idea of either how or why, you know, and it's actually at that point when the big questions pop up. When you're talking about there being a need to actually force this regime out, there's very big questions that are posed and they're critically important questions if this is actually going to happen. And I know you pay a lot of attention to that, you know, so let's talk about that, including the immediacy of it and the immediacy of the need.
Well, yeah, so you talk about immediacy. This is not just your normal bourgeois presidency. We had awful presidencies. I've threatened my entire lifetime. I mean, I could go back to LBJ and Nixon. I'm old enough. I was in grade school then. Criminal, mass murderous, corporatist, and all of that. But it seems like the Republican regimes, with each reincarnation or each version, have sort of gotten progressively more white nationalist, fascistic, racist, and all of that. I think that's fair to say. Maybe the original George Bush was not ever more fascistic compared to Reagan. Maybe actually the same or somewhat less. But Nixon to Reagan, certainly to the second George Bush, 43, not Trump. And Trump seems to have sort of crossed a line from quantity to quality. Not just quantitatively worse, but qualitatively worse. And in fact, neo-fascistic, if not fascistic. You know, running a bunch of just classically fascistic narratives, palingenetic, full-on redemptive white nationalism, the full-on demonization of a racially demonized minority, in his case, Mexican American and other and Central American immigrants, an open embrace of the use of political violence against his perceived political enemies, an open and really extreme repudiation of bourgeois law and constitutional norms. You know, today I just heard on the news that Trump made a reference to what did he call it? This trumped up or this fake. Or this so-called emoluments clause. My God, the emoluments clause is Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution. Anyone can go online and read it up. He's acting like the emoluments clause is a made-up piece of fake news. He demonizes the independent bourgeois media as the enemy of the people. He has actually said that he might, through executive order, roll back or abolish or undo the constitutional right of birthright citizenship, that is, that citizenship is granted to anyone that's born in the United States of America. It's just absolutely extraordinary. And so this is different. And it's existentially essential for this regime to go on numerous levels, but one of them for me is environmental and is ecological. No, Trump did not invent the environmental crisis. The ecological crisis, which is really, in broad historical terms, quite imminent and ongoing. We are at 415 parts per million CO2 in the environment right now, heading towards 450, if not 500 parts per million by 2050. That's the Antarctic, okay? That's the end of the Amazon rainforest. That's the end of all chances and prospects for an organized, decent human existence. And I have the distinct impression that if Trump gets a second term, and stays in office while he did not invent this crisis, he can lock it in. He can make it permanent. He can carry it past the last remaining tipping points for any chances of any kind of decent future. On numerous levels, this regime has to go, and it has to go more quickly, probably, than what the normal bourgeois institutions are going to do in terms of eliminating it.
Well, how do you actually bring that out to people? Because one of the things I wanted to ask you about right away was, you know, you do speak to people. You speak to people who are arguing that, yes, I know he's really bad. He's like, and, you know, everything from the simpleton saying that he's embarrassing to the actual people who even are saying, well, he does represent sort of the heart and soul of America, if you really understand what it is. But that let's not rush. Let's not be rash in what we're doing, that we should let the process unfold through the normal process of elections if we're really going to be able to walk out of this alive.
Oh, well, let's not be rash. Well, you know, it's hard to know what to say now, particularly with this latest impeachment crisis. It's clear as day. I mean, it's sitting right there. They've got him on an open and egregious abuse of power. Now, I don't say that Ukraine gate. They actually have whistleblower reports, which appear to be slam dunk and accurate, that the guy did a ruling class no-no. He used the imperial leverage of the U.S. presidency, which is used all the time. Presidents bully other countries. What the ruling class no-no is that Pelosi, I think to some extent to her surprise, has had handed to her in her lap and had forced her hand, is they've got him using the imperial leverage of the U.S. presidency to bully a foreign leader into helping dig up political dirt on a political opponent. In other words, he wants to use the imperial power of the presidency to enhance his own domestic political power. You don't do that as far, even as the ruling class is concerned. So they've got him on that. Now, I mean, you know, for those of us on the left, that's probably, you know, like 15 or 16 or 17 down on the list of our articles of impeachment for this guy. But they've got him. And, you know, I don't think they're going to be able to hold public opinion and hold the public attention and the attention of the media much past Thanksgiving if they don't move on that fairly quickly. So even in a sort of normal political kind of sense, I think they better move pretty quickly on that. So we'll just see how long that takes. But from our perspective, this guy now is like a cornered rat. He's an extremely dangerous man. He's psychologically disordered. He's a neo-fascist. He's a very venal and childish type of neo-fascist. I don't think he's capable of any kind of deep understanding of political doctrine of any kind, even fascist doctrine, though Steve Miller certainly is, and Steve Bannon certainly is, whether he is or not. But he's an incredibly malignant and vile authoritarian who's a sociopath, and God knows what kind of he might want to pull as he gets further and further pushed into the corner of impeachment, and now possibly, I'm not betting on it, and now possibly removal. So I would much rather see a popular intervention on the style and scale of what's happened in other countries to remove horrible tyrannical regimes before he can really pull some unbelievable fake a terrorist attack, bomb a country, God knows what, right? Invade Venezuela. I mean, this guy's fully capable of wagging the dog in some very noxious and disastrous kinds of ways. So really, the sooner the people step in and get rid of him, the better for all of us, not to mention that every day this guy is tearing up environmental regulations that are spewing more and more carbon and CO2 into the environment in ways that we just can't survive.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that struck me, too, is that you argue that there's a danger to relying on impeachment as well, even though, you know, they want to get him out of there through impeachment. Fine, go ahead, get him out of there through impeachment. But you argue that there's also some real danger tied up with impeaching him, and you call it the impeachment carnival. Let's talk about that.
Well, you know, the danger is it's already bad enough with the what I call the quadrennial candidate-centered major party, big media electoral extravaganzas or spectacles. I mean, these paralyzing carnivals whereupon we are all instructed that we have meaningful input in the political process. We have none, but that we are led to believe we do because we get to make marks next to names of candidates who've already been approved in advance for us by the nation's unelected dictatorships of money and empire. You know, for what? For 2 minutes, once every 4 years. I mean, it's just astonishing that we've been reduced down to that in terms of our definition of what our political put in. So that's already sort of bad enough. And, you know, that's already underway. I noticed that once Russiagate finally petered out this summer, it was almost instantaneously replaced by the candidate spectacle, you know, the Democratic presidential candidates. We don't have a candidate spectacle on the Republican side because they have an incumbent over there. But what? We had 20 candidates. Now we're down to 12 or whatever, and just this obsession with who they are. And it looks like that's what it's always going to be. To what? To convince us to stay glued to the tube and sitting on the couches with our clickers in our hands looking at CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News, seeing who the candidates are going to be. Then, boom, then all of a sudden, Ukraine gate. I'm not a conspiracy theorist about it. I think it probably just kind of happened. Maybe I'm wrong, and it happened, and it fell in Nancy Pelosi's lap. And now we have Ukraine gate, and it's irresistible to the Democratic Party, and it's in this strange, curious tension with the candidate spectacle, you know, in terms of vying for the headlines. It's been holding the headlines for the last 3 or 4 weeks, however long it's been going on. But it becomes another excuse for all of us to just sort of sit staring at our telescreens and thinking that, oh, they'll remove him. They'll fix all of this through their constitutional process. And on top of which, then that in turn helps us fall in love with this very deeply conservative and reactionary document called the U.S. Constitution, which we're supposed to ignore the fact that it's in a profoundly reactionary document crafted by 18th century powdered wig wearing, tight wearing slaveholders and merchant capitalists for whom democracy was like the ultimate nightmare to and a great threat to property. So, I don't know. There's some dangers involved in that, not to mention the danger of letting Trump off his worst crimes by narrowing down to this very constricted focus on a very limited crime. It's a real crime, but it's a relatively limited crime, and it's a relatively ruling class, intra-elite kind of crime, is exploiting the imperial power of the presidency to advance his political fortunes. You know, as opposed to the other he's done, which is, you know, I mean, separating children and families, abrogating international laws of asylum rights, fake national emergencies to build a fascist nativist wall, ecocide, which, you know, actually is an impeachable offense. Ecocide is an impeachable offense, ought to be understood as such. The preamble of the Constitution that all these policymakers and the federal government take an oath to require policymakers to respect and serve the general welfare of the population. Well, you know, the extinction of the human race by turning the planet into a greenhouse gas chamber is not exactly aligned with the general welfare. I mean, I could go on with Trump's crimes as impeachable offenses for probably the next 15 minutes. So these are dangers, absolutely. I mean, God knows we want this son of a out of there. He's a lethal, malignant threat to the human race. But maybe not this way, and not for Ukraine gates. They might throw in obstruction, and they might throw in the emoluments clause into the case for his impeachment and perhaps removal. But for us on the left, it's much, much more than that.
You know, it's very interesting to me when you say that, because actually there's something that you spoke about in that article was very important, I thought, and I think people really need to think about this. You talk about how impeachment doesn't automatically get rid of a president, and it's very difficult to do so. And in fact, no president has ever been removed impeachment. And this is something that I think a lot of people, you know, you include that when you're talking about that, you talk about the fallacy of the people believing by we the people. And, you know, I think it's something that really politically is really disarms people, I think, when they think that this is actually the way to go, or this is what we can do. We can break the, you know, we can do this with impeachment and it'll work in our favor and all this other stuff. But there's actually never been a real impeachment.
It'll happen. You know, I would qualify that a little in that I would say that Nixon was a de facto impeachment and removal. When Barry Goldwater went in there and said they've got the Republican votes in the Senate for you not just to be impeached and removed, Nixon resigned prior to the process being fully carried out. So in a sense, it kind of did. But that's just once. And that was a case of a guy who was just egregiously caught red-handed in this idiotic break-in in the other major capitalist party, the Democratic Party's campaign headquarters, completely unnecessary, humorously enough, since McGovern didn't have a chance, the break in there, and then the tapes, you know, the White House transcripts, the taped recordings, when John Dean, you know, it was just there, you know, and he was going to be gone. So it kind of did with him, but that's it. It's incredibly difficult, and it's incredibly difficult on purpose. It's scary to me how many Americans don't even know what the process is. There's the that the impeachment is like an indictment. It's only an indictment, and it requires a majority in the House. Removal takes place in the Senate, and the legal analogy to removal is conviction. And removal requires, has a very high bar. It requires 2/3 of the U.S. Senate. And that's why it's never happened. I repeat, it would have happened with Nixon, but it's never happened. God knows Andrew Johnson, who was a friend of the slave owners after 500,000 people died fighting the Civil War to end slavery, and he couldn't be removed by the Senate. Obviously, Bill Clinton wasn't removed by the Senate. It's very hard to do, and that's on purpose, because the founders were very authoritarian and anti-democratic. They wanted to make it very, very difficult to actually remove a president. And, you know, the Constitution is so absurdly anti-democratic that right now the state of Wyoming has as many people in the U.S. Senate as the state of California. If California had the same, I think I calculated this once, if California had the same population per U.S. senator ratio as Wyoming, California would have like 38 or 39 U.S. senators, okay? Chicago or Brooklyn would all have many, many more U.S. senators than the states of Wyoming or Montana and all of that. And so you have this absurd overrepresentation of these small, rural, disproportionately white and reactionary and right-wing Republican red states in the U.S. Senate, which makes it highly unlikely. I don't rule it out completely, but highly unlikely that the U.S. Senate would actually vote to remove him. And so then you have the danger that he's impeached and not removed, and then the right-wing neo-fascist white nationalist Republican Party rallies around the notion that Trump was quote-unquote exonerated after Ukraine Gate, and that's dangerous too. That's something that Nancy Pelosi has a reason to be scared of. And it was one of the reasons she didn't want to go all the way with impeachment, with Russiagate, even though the Mueller report did have enough. It had enough for impeachment on obstruction, but she didn't want to do it. She didn't want to give him an exoneration. That could happen again. That's another reason for we the people to step in before these elites can carry their process to full fruition.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with Paul Street. And we're talking with Paul about an article he wrote in Counterpunch magazine about the Trump regime and impeachment, all right? And Paul's latest book is They Rule, The 1% Versus Democracy from Paradigm. You know, another thing that you spoke about, which is really important, I think, is, and I'm familiar with this organization, I've worked with it, Refuse Fascism. You know, You cite Refuse Fascism for warning that impeachment must not be allowed to become another waiting game, another means by which millions who hate what's happening are sucked into a waiting game while the horror continues. To me, that's a really an incredibly important analysis there that people, not enough people get. You know, they just think that we can actually push for impeachment, even if it's a broader impeachment or whatever, and that then just let it go, let it go by, you know?
Well, it's an important analysis, and it's really to be noted that they have really happened upon an exceedingly dead on point there. You know, and it goes after sort of two kinds of misconceptions, the liberal misconception, the bourgeois liberal faith in these constitutional mechanisms that are part of a very deeply reactionary conservative parchment, a document from the late 18th century, and that's good enough to do it, that's going to get it done. But it's also in the phrase, there's a lot of people on the left who don't want to admit that this regime, including the soulless, sociopathic Midtown Mussolini Trump himself, and then beneath him, his insurance policy, this evangelical Christian fascist Mike Pence, that these folks together and much of the Republican Party and frankly, a good part of their base, maybe a quarter of the country, I don't know, are sort of become objective neo-fascistic forces in this country. I mean, this is a president, the first one that I can think of in my lifetime, who's a real threat not to honor the outcome of an electoral college count and it doesn't go his way, okay? Who just systematically and consistently defies basic elements of the bourgeois rule of law. We're dealing with something new and different here. This is not just the same old, same old. This is not just the awful, terrible corporate imperial Democratic and Republican Party that I've been writing bitterly against for many years. I'm no fan of the old-time politics before Trump, but this is something new and different, and there's a denial about that in certain parts of the left now. It's really very strange and very odd. And you get called a lesser evilist friend of the corporate Democrats, you know, which is just an absurd thing to call someone like me. I mean, my publication record stands for itself. I've been relentlessly critical of the mainstream Democratic Party since the first time I ever took pen to paper, you know. But you get accused of being a Clintonite or an Obamaite for pointing out that there are fascist elements in key positions of power, conducting a fascist style of politics in this country with a fascist style and socioeconomically and ideologically, culturally fascist base, frankly, behind it, a base that's absurdly overly represented because of the structure of American politics imposed by this deeply reactionary parchment document crafted by slave owners and elite merchant capitalists in the late 18th century. It's just, no one wants to talk about that. It's really funny. I'm always amused by the way the Constitution gets this free pass. We're just not going to talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things when you were speaking to, I kept thinking about, I was out on the Santa Monica Pier the other day, Saturday.
Sure.
And I think a lot of people on the pier, a lot of people in the country might have been surprised about what happened, because people went out there to, you know, they did an action against Trump and Pence and the regime and fascism and all this. And the action was, you know, it was a good action. It was on the beach, and then people went up to,
sure,
you know, to reach out to more people on the pier, and they were doing a die-in on the pier and all this stuff. And all of a sudden, these fascists who had been just, you know, running around with their flags and disrupting the, you know, the event down on the beach.
Was this an Extinction Rebellion event or an ecological?
No. This was called by Refuse Fascism.
Okay, sure.
And it basically, it was very heavy, because what ended up happening is that these Nazis just, I mean, at a certain point, they came barreling down out of the, you know, out of the thing and tried to break up the rally, and they weren't able to do that. And when people were getting ready to move out up onto the pier itself, where there were a lot more people than there were on the beach at the time. And when it started, and when people were in the middle of trying to do a die-in, these Nazis just came in, and I mean, they were kicking butt, trying to anyway. They were trying to bust through the circles and get to people and intimidate people. And then one of them had a big can of, what was it, bear repellent, and sprayed it on people's faces, you know, in the course of all this. Yeah, so it was a very heavy thing. And when you think about this, you know, you think about that this impeachment, it's not just that, you know, it's what we're talking about in general, or what's going on with Trump and that, but also the base that Trump has, you were just speaking about, has just sort of pulled together and really worked to pull that together. That can be a mobilizer. You know, this impeachment thing can be a mobilizer of very bad things.
Oh, that's a good point. Right. That's a good point. There's a threat that the impeachment thing mobilizes the hell out of these really dangerous and dodgy neo-fascistic elements. On one hand, while sort of demobilizing progressive forces, on the other hand, sort of out of this sense that, well, the elites have got it taken care of. They're going to get rid of this guy. They're using the good old Constitution, and it's going to be just like Nixon. Well, you know what? This is not Watergate. Richard Nixon did not have Fox News and right-wing talk radio and Breitbart and Twitter and this hyper-partisan kind of political culture where you could just segue off of a significant portion of the population and just keep them enraptured with their charismatic dear leader, you know, Donald Trump. This is a different ball of wax. And, you know, I might add also, we've got assault rifles back again. We got rid of the assault rifle ban, and a bunch of these people are armed. That was what I was going to ask you as I was listening to you talking about that incident. Were any of them armed? Because some of these people are armed. And, you know, take that incident down in Charlottesville. Mm-hmm. I've heard numerous first-person accounts of Charlottesville to the effect that Cornel West and some of the liberals and leftists and progressives who were counter-protesting against the right might have been seriously physically attacked but for the armed resistance of Redneck Rebellion. Believe it or not, white guys from the South who are lefties, who were watching guard over this situation. I mean, this is reality, you know, out there. This does raise the question of armed self-defense. These people are extremely armed. Trump is not above triggering people. You know, sometimes I wonder if he needs the true in the streets, you know, mass mobilized brown shirts of the classic fascist era. He can freaking activate these psychotic white nationalists who stored up ammunition and their assault rifles in their basements and, you know, waiting for the signals, these weird messages that come out of their dear leader. We have to be on guard, and it's really quite dangerous. This is yet more reason to get this guy out of here as soon as possible. And I don't know, you know, I do not look forward to the possibility of four more years of this guy, too. If he feels validated by the outcome in 2020, God only knows what level of repression and smackdown and payback, not just leftists, but liberals might be looking at in a Trump 2 term, but a second Trump term.
And not to mention what it's going to mean for the rest of the people in the world as well, which is, you know.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, one more question.
The rest of the world. I love to hear the Trump and left people, as I call them, the Herald Donald as some sort of peace president. He's a peace president.
Right. Now, that brings us to our last question. And you know, there's something that was very important, I think, in that you wrote in this. And, well, there was a lot that was very important, but this is something that really I think people need to consider and think about. And don't use it as an excuse for not getting out there, but actually use it as a reason to understand what's going on and then deciding what you have to do and in terms of standing up and opposing this. You said that impeachment is not a rebellion, and you argued that the best way to remove Trump is through sustained mass rebellion by the people. I couldn't agree with you more, but I want you to talk about that a little, because it's a very...
Well, you know, listen, direct action is what really gets the goods. I was always a big fan of the late great radical historian Howard Zinn, who had this great line in 2007 to the effect of that it's not just about sitting who's in the White House. Who's sitting in the White House, it's about who's sitting in the streets. And no matter who's in the White House, nothing has ever happened without direct action in the streets. That's certainly true of the sit-down strikes in the 1930s, the Flint sit-down strikes, and the whole strike wave that spread across this country in 1936 and 1937. It's true about the civil rights movement. It required considerable long-term, not just a protest here and there, but long-term campaigns of civil disobedience across the South. That's the only reason we got the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. I think that the death count in Southeast Asia was reduced significantly by sustained mass civil disobedience conducted by the anti-Vietnam War movement. You know, Trump's national emergency, you know what brought that to an end, actually, finally?
What's that?
You know, the government shutdown over the fake national emergency was when air service workers started calling in sick to a degree that the plane started bottling up at LaGuardia and whole capitalist air travel network significantly disrupted. And that was the end of that story, because working people intervened. Now, right now, in terms of whole regimes and whole governments, if we think globally, if we think just beyond U.S. shores, there's a whole bunch going on right now in terms of reversing policies and even getting rid of governments. I'm talking about Puerto Rico, where the fascist, neo-Nazi, sexist gubernatorial regime was basically overthrown by the populace through days and days and days of mass civil disobedience. Regressive and authoritarian and dangerous extradition law imposed on Hong Kong by Beijing was essentially repealed by ongoing campaigns of mass civil disobedience in Hong Kong, but are still ongoing. There was an important gas tax that was very regressive, that was opposed by the French population last year, and was essentially forced to be repealed by sustained, pretty badass, significant campaigns of disruption and disobedience by the Gilets Jaunes. The Ecuadorian government, just a week or two ago, had to leave Quito and roll back and reverse a neoliberal austerity package, including, by the way, a regressive gas tax, by mass civil disobedience in the streets of Quito and other parts of Ecuador. A government was overthrown by a campaign to sustain mass civil disobedience in an authoritarian fascist government in Algeria last year. There are revolutions underway right now in Haiti, and I understand there are now mass protests in the streets of Lebanon. And there's a second kind of uprising in Egypt. People get this. They know this. A lot of things are coming apart at the seams right now. And the people have to enter the stage of history again and again throughout history. This is how real change occurs, not just by an election or an impeachment or letting the elites fix things. They won't fix things. Now, the last thing they want to do is put people in the streets. They want to create an illusion of progressive change, but in a way that keeps their class, property, and political privileges intact without mobilizing the populace. And we can't let them do that anymore, and we won't survive if we continue to fall prey to those kinds of false top-down solutions. We've run out of time for that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm just one quick point, and you can speak to it after I do this. And I think it's important because I think, you know, people have to understand that this is not something that can wait, not just wait for elections, but that can wait for any reason, that this is actually something that people have to, the time for action is now. That's the
right
point. And I know Refuse Fascism has just inaugurated this new organization called Out Now. They've just done this. They started this new organization called Out Now.
Well, this is an important point. This intermediate stage can be very dangerous, where he's cornered and looks like he's in trouble, but he's not out yet, and he still has all this power, and he has this regressive right-wing, armed base just waiting to go off and do some horrible shit. The sooner we get this guy out of here, the better off we're all going to be.
All right,
and
Paul,
this regime and the system that gave rise to it, because Trump is a symptom of the whole class system. We should never forget that.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you said that too, man. This is very important that people understand that.
Right.
All right, Paul.
Anyways, he's an epitome of it. He's sort of the ultimate embodiment of soulless, egotistical capitalism.
Exactly. Exactly. Very well put. And Paul, thank you very much for joining us today.
You bet.
All right.
Talk
to you again soon.
Bye-bye.
Take care. And as we end this conversation with Paul, I want to let people know that there is a new organization called Out Now, and it's a call from Refuse Fascism has been put out. And refusefascism.org is a movement of people coming from diverse perspectives, united in our recognition that the Trump-Pence regime poses a catastrophic danger to humanity and the planet, and that it's our responsibility to drive them from power through nonviolent protests that grow every day until our demand is met. This nightmare must end. The Trump-Pence regime must go. And check out for more information on Out Now. Check out Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Refuse Fascism. And just so people know, we will be doing updates of the situation with the people that were attacked on the Santa Monica Pier last Saturday. So stay tuned for that. And that brings us to the end of yet another show. I want to thank all of the people who worked on this show, my assistant producer, Henry Carson, production assistant, Jeff Pryor, and engineer, Teddy Robinson, and each and every one of you for tuning in. If you want to write to me, you can at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Once again, that's mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. We're going to go out now with Not In Our Name. Talk to you again next week.
How I'm crushing the beat. Later for that, our government is leading us off track like Broadway shows. Go for a second act. That's absurd. One step away from the seventh sign. Your imperialist mind destroying God's design. Father like son in one raised up begun instead of uniting the world like the colors of Benetton. One
mark of the beast. Men I wear one. New world order taking over. Men I care, son. Illuminati not affecting me. I give my soul up to John. Let the maggots have the rest of me. So you can keep on stressing me and arresting me. No matter how you try, you bastards never get the best of me. Sun rises in the east, so you always be the west of me.